Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, a World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners. No prisoners. 1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take newsletter. I'm a broker here at Daniels Trading, which is a division of Stone X, formerly FC Stone. We work with farmers, end users, hedgers, speculative trading. We have managed products, online trading, broker assisted, a hybrid of all. So if you have any questions for us, whether you're a client here now or thinking about working with us, you can give me a call at 800-958-9470. If you want to check out the newsletter, you can go to turnerstake.com. If you want, or you can text number 33777, that's 33777, and just text the message Turner, my last name. You can check out the newsletter that way too. If you like this podcast, feel free to pass it along. The more people who like it, and also rate it positively on Apple, iTunes. The more people we can get and can find us on this podcast, and also to get on the newsletter and hopefully work with us. So let's get into it here. Also, finally, all my contact information is always in the show notes and on the website, turnerstake.com. And if you are a client here and you have these positions on, or you want to do something, you can give me a call, you can shoot me a text, call my cell, whatever it is, please get in touch with me. Okay, so let's talk about the macro markets. We are positive. We have had a peaceful transition of power here in the United States. It looks like President Biden is doing some things with his executive orders that the market likes. I think it really just comes down to stimulus, for the most part, which is what the market's probably going to like the most. And other than that, it's kind of steady as she goes. We'll have to see what else happens with Keystone and corporate taxes and other stimulus and business developments. But for right now, it's kind of a continuation, right? You know, between admins. So, and also there is an expected recovery from the coronavirus, which would mean expected recovery in economic development, right? So there is probably a lot of pent-up economic demand just from the whole, hopefully, of the world kind of coming out of coronavirus lockdowns and quarantines or social distancing, and as the vaccine gets rolled out. So regardless of who the president is or what's going on politically, you would think there'd be some pent-up expectations of demand and growth around the corner, too. So that is what the macro landscape looks like right now. We're going to switch on over into the grain and oilseed markets, which have more to do with its own fundamentals and less to do with what's happening in the macro markets. So I want to first talk about soybeans. You know, we are kind of having a little bit of a breather in the soybean market right now, and which is funny because we are, what, 1375 in March. We have had better rains in South America, and that's going to help stabilize the crop. We still see exports being strong. And really, if you look at where major support comes in for the old crop beans right now, it's 1350. A major resistance level is going to be those highs, a day or two after the report, around 1330, 1335. Another support level for soybeans will be at that 13 and, 1250. The high end of the targets are probably 1550 right now. And to a lot of people, that's a big range, right? 12 to 1250 on the low end to 1550 on the high end. We'll see what we're going to have to We'll talk about two things. Talk about old crop, then we'll talk about new crop. So just in terms of old crop, we're going to be tight. South America will have a crop. How big it is, we'll find out. But there really hasn't been a whole lot of price rationing. And when I mean that, you might say, Craig, what do you mean? We're at $13. There hasn't been any price rationing. Exports were strong this today, right? We're still making sales where we're going to be over, you know, beating current USD export numbers by a few hundred million, couple hundred million bushels, and we don't have a couple hundred million bushels to spare. So even now, the pace is not slowing down for exports as much as it needs to be in order to have the carryout where the USDA says it's going to be, which means further, and just by definition, that means further price rationing has to happen. And as we've been trading in old crop beans in the high 13s to low 14s, business on the export market is still getting done in the United States. And we saw that today. So we probably have to go higher to price ration effectively. I think the market may be waiting to see maybe if the South American crop is bigger, right? If it we were talking about 135 million metric tons, what if it's a, you know, what if it's 140? Just so you know, when we talk a million metric tons, you can it's about 36, 37 million bushels. So if we are talking about, you know, the South American crop stabilizing and, you know, maybe things aren't as bad as they say, 5 million metric tons, it's 5 times 36, 5 times 36, you know, it's 180 million bushels. So somewhere between, let's call it 150 and 200 could get added back because of the weather. On the pace that we're on now, I mean, it doesn't help ending stocks. I mean, right now we're supposed to be over at, you know, on the pace we'll be adding, you know, 200 to, you know, about 200 to 250 million bushels to exports that we don't have. And if South America can basically soak that up because maybe the production's a little bit better, it still keeps the United States carry out somewhere in the mid 100s, which still says we should be between 12 and 15. Dollars. And that's the best case scenario in terms of having adequate stocks right now. The worst case scenario is, you know, some there is the weather helped but not helped enough. Some places are good but more places are bad in South America in terms of yields because the weather was stressing. And you know, we go the next leg higher. So for now, old crop 1250, 1550. We'll see how the South American weather is. And the thing is, if we don't have the product down in South America, and as we move along into the United States, there is the potential for that breakout, and these breakouts would be fast and kind of be vacuum-like, you know, hidden air pockets up and down when the prices get that high, as end users need the soybeans, right? That's usually how it goes. So I still like buying call spreads and selling put spreads. On the old crop, I think it's the better way to play it. I don't love being long futures. If you are, you can always buy some puts, short dated puts if you want to use futures. But the bias is still bullish, but I do expect more of a chop until we know more about South American weather. As far as new crop goes, you know, $11, we're 11.70 right now. I take a look at our balance sheets for next year. And I'm seeing, let's say we really do ending stocks around where we are now, the USDA says, or a little bit lower, at 91 million acres and 50 and a half yield, which would be trend line at the ag form. We use just as much as we produce, so we're still in the same boat. And 91 million acres of soybeans could be tough to get to this year. I mean, that's an add-on of 7, 8. Million bush a million acres, and that's in the face of with corn doing so well and high wheat prices, and not just that, you know, other crop prices in the United States are also strong. That may not compete with it on the board, Chicago Board of Trade, but definitely compete with it in the local markets and more of a specialty crop. So, I mean, everything is higher, and you know, if you're a farmer, you probably don't want, if everything is higher and everything's going to make money in pencils, you probably just don't want to be in one crop. I mean, if you can make money in two or three different crops and you know, and kind of hedge that risk, right? You're most the conversations that I'm having, that's what's going to have. So even though we expect corn kind of stay around the same. And soybeans to add on, it's not like there's just one problem child out there, and all the acres go into that crop to get the higher price. When they all pencil this well on profitability per acre, actually, it's the smarter move for the farmer to kind of spread it out a little bit between corn and wheat and soybeans and some other specialty crops that they may have in their area, just as a diversification from overall risk and pricing in each one, because you never know, right? And so it's going to be interesting to see if new crop soybeans can get to 90 or 91. Plus, if there's a couple of situations. One, planting might not go that well this year. It's a lot of acres. We're going to try to get in, I think the United States is going to try to get in about 230 million acres or let's just call it 184 million acres of combined corn and soybeans max, right? That's tough. That would be a record, I think. We're pretty close to it, to get that combined back, corn and soybean acres. And we're going to be dry, most likely. But even if we aren't, even if conditions are perfect, then you just got to think more corn are going, right? Because if you can do 5 or 10% more corn and corn prices are high and you got the planters rolling, sometimes that's what happens. Like the marginal ground just gets planted corn because they can do it. And then if we do have planting issues and corn's in late, then soybeans are in late. And that is a problem with planting too. So there are a lot of things that can go wrong with beans. Plus, you got to have a 50 and a half yield. And the thing is, as we're adding on acres to soybeans, it tends not to be the highest productive land that's getting added on. A lot of times it's marginal land, that's getting added on here at the end, these last couple of million acres, where $9 soybeans weren't even close to being profitable, even at the most favorable margins. But $13 are. And that usually doesn't mean you have a trend line yield in those situations. So it's going to be interesting. I think new crop soybeans, I have a saying, new crop eventually becomes old crop. $11 is going to be support for soybeans here. It's 70 cents lower. You never know what can happen. But I do think, just given these conditions, we could be seeing 13 over the summer. So much is dependent upon the weather in South America, how exports continue to pace, and then US planting weather. And you may hear me say, we're going to have some chop here. It's going to be a big, wide-ranging chop. So I do like buying support. If the market's down for a few days and everyone's kind of given a little panic, like is the party over? It's not. That's usually when you get that feeling, is the party over? It's usually the time to buy. And when you get bull markets like this that are going to last for over two crop years, old crop and new crop, most likely. In soybeans, there's an old saying, bull markets always let you in. And that is probably what's going on now. Now, just because at the end of the day, we're bullish, doesn't mean we can have some, excuse me, very short-term price pressures to the downside. So I would use, like I said, you got to have some kind of put protection or some kind of limited risk call strategy where you're not opening yourself up to unlimited risk to the downside just because we are using margined derivative products here, and something to keep in mind. Soybean oil. Still like soybean oil. What's interesting about soybean oil is, if you take a look at world vegetable oil stocks or usage, we've increased every year. Even in like 2008, when soybean oil got to 70 cents a pound, which by the way, we're only at 42 right now. And then in 11, 12, and 13, we were in like the high 50s and hit 60 back then. But every year, global vegetable oil usage went up and has gone up every year since 2006. Even when we had swine flu, even when we had the big droughts of 12. What ends up happening is, it's a very demand inelastic product. So I still like bean oil. It will have its ups and downs. I still like buying call spreads and selling put spreads. I'm going to continue to do that. And we hit our price target of around 50. We'll just keep on rolling them up. But I don't, being long futures can be difficult and challenging in a time like this. And I've been through these markets before the first time around, actually, two times. I remember the 2007, 2008 period. And I also was a broker through the, 2011 through 2013 period. And I've just learned that, when you're going from adequate to burdensome price levels and you think you're going to get tight, you get in the futures. Once you're at tight and you think you can keep on going higher, you switch to the option market. That's just been my experience. And that's what I'll continue to do. But that's where we are on the vegetable oil market. I get a lot of questions these days from farmers or traders. Maybe you're a trader out here and you like to trade the grain markets. Maybe you're a farmer. Maybe you're an end user. Talking to a lot more end users now that have price risk to the upside, where they're really concerned about input costs, which I completely understand. In 6 months, things have really changed for a lot of the food service industry here. Here's the thing: there is risk, on all this to the upside. So if you're a farmer, you don't want to sell too early. If you're the end user, you don't want to wait too long. When it comes to that, what you got to figure out here is we're most likely going to be in a price range of, I think I said 12 to 12 and a half, all the way up to 15 to 15 and a half on the soybean market. Next year, if we have the same tight stocks and have weather issues, you can actually go through, because when you have 2 years in a row of crop problems, that's how we got to 18 in 2012. It wasn't that when we had a drought and that was a big deal in 12, but we were coming in tight. Like we were coming in tight and needing a big crop that year, and we didn't get it. So if there is a chance for meal to go to 500, or actually, hold on a second, where is meal now? Bear with me, I'm gonna just put this on pause. Yeah, so meal, it would be meal to the low 500s, to get there, or to get soybean oil into the 50s and 60s, and to get soybeans above 15 and a half to where it's challenging that 16, 17, even the 18, highs from back in the drought years. That's a 2 year development. So for those prices to happen, you would need issues this summer where you're not getting enough acres and you're coming in tight. And then you have weather issues, or we're dry, or La Nina extends into the spring here and summer into the northern hemisphere, which are all possibilities. So, one thing is, I don't love being short these markets, really at all. And then I do like being long, but when you get these big bull markets with tight stocks, the price swings can be quite big. So if you need help managing that, let me know, whether you're on the producer side, the commercial side, you're a trader, whatever it may be. That is what we're really kind of honing in on, like how to take advantage of these markets, but have some limited risk and really understand what to look for. Another question I get, especially from the commercial side, but also on the farmer side and the trader side too, is, how do you know when the party's over? Like, how long are we going to be in this environment? What signs do you look for where, things could be ending, right? Because the farmer is thinking about not just their old crop, but when to sell their new crop, right? They don't want to let prices get away from them when they reverse. And on the commercial side, a lot of these guys are worried about, what if prices keep on going up and we do see 2011, 12, 13, like 12 prices, right? With the soybean market, keep in mind it's all about the crush. If the crush is positive, and there's demand, then they'll keep on buying soybeans. What happens is, the way you figure out the crush, you got the price of meal, you got the price of oil. You convert that into basically cents per bushel. There's a mathematical equation for it. You add them up, you subtract the price of soybeans, you see where we are. We've been between $1 and $2 over a positive crush, in, let's say, in central Illinois. But whether it be domestically or in China, the crush has to be positive. And in years past, where we've had these huge market rallies in soybeans, what would happen is the price of soybeans and the price of meal would outpace oil. And at some point, the meal plus oil price wouldn't be greater than soybeans anymore. And that's when the crush gets negative, and that's when you start to see demand, crush, slow down in demand, slow down domestically, or China, that their move when that happens is to cancel cargoes, right? So when you see China cancels cargoes, it's not that they canceled cargoes, it's that their crush margins are negative. And now it's like, okay, has price rationing finally kicked in? Are we so high now that it just doesn't make sense? And that's what that's really about, why when you see those cargoes canceled, what's going on? Another time, now sometimes that's what it is. Sometimes they cancel cargoes just because it's so much cheaper down in Brazil, and there are financial contracts that they have, and they look at the contracts in the United States and they say to themselves, well, it's so much cheaper down in South America. I may have a little bit of a penalty here in my cash contract, or I pay the difference from where I got in, and then I cancel that in the US, and then I go ahead and re-enter in South America. Those things exist on, those things exist at the physical grain or the cash grain trade, and that's what you see sometimes, and that's a little bit different. That's pricing for between source. So that's one thing, and that's how you know where old crop is getting toppy. You really do. That's where the old crop gets toppy. It's either in the export slowdown, right, and that's what everyone's keeping an eye on, and also which they aren't, and then it's the crush margins. And those would be the two telltale factors, is if old crop is still bullish or not. On there's the second part of this is new crop, and when you see the acres come out. So the whole point of the market now is to keep these markets priced high enough to really get everyone and their brother to plant as much as possible. That's where we are. And what will these new crop acres look like? Now, the thing is, if just one commodity is high, it's able to get enough acres to make this a 1 year issue. But when a lot of the commodity prices are high and there's tightness in multiple markets, it's difficult to get enough acres in the next year to go back to a adequate or burdensome carryout. And right now, soybeans looks to be the tightest, so that will probably be the last to come in. So we're thinking, I mean, soybeans for a new crop, we'll see what the acres are like. But if we're 90 or below, I mean, the new crop bean contract is going to be trading just like old crop next year, and the potential is even greater on the weather rallies, just because we're going to be much more tighter year over year. So that is something that everyone needs to keep in mind. So soybean oil, I like soybean oil. I like soybeans. It's going to be a wild ride. I've got ideas on how to get into those markets, limited risk, and the way you can participate, whether you're a speculator, farmer, end user. Just let me know. Far as corn goes, I think we're fairly priced. I really do. We can have weather issues. We could have higher demand, but corn, new crop, $4.50 to $5 makes sense to me. Five, you know, $4.75, $4.40 makes a lot of sense right now, just based on where carryout's going to be. And same thing with the old crop. I mean, if we're going to be one, USDA says we're 1.5 billion. I really think we're 1.2 or 1.3. And if that's the case, we should be around $5 in the old crop. And with the new crop, if we have 92 million acres and a trend line yield, we'll probably be about 1.5, 1.4 starting off the estimates, which really means corn should be, yeah, I mean, mid to high fours in that kind of scenario. And we'll just have to see where we go in terms of acres, where the summer rallies, could add on 50 cents in corn. It's not going to be as bullish as soybeans, but it's still a more bullish, it's definitely more bullish than a bearish picture for the corn market now. So I've also been getting a lot of questions on bear spreading corn. There is a popular seasonal that comes out about selling July and then buying these, selling September and buying these, which is a bear spread. I want to say Septis corn's at around 25 cents over. I want to say the July these corn is about 70 cents over. Usually in most years they eventually come in. The thing is, between now and let's say July 4th, a lot can happen. I've always liked Sep versus Dece better than July versus Dece on the bear spread. I think it's more manageable. So if you are a spread trader, a seasonal trader, you play the basis or the carry, and our bread and butter for years was Set First East, and it used to be like one of our best performers year in and year out. The timing of that, or just understanding the liquidity, is important. So, someone will take a look at the September versus December margins. I don't know what they are. I haven't looked at what the margin is for Set versus East corn. All I know is that's too low. So, so what you have to remember here in an environment like this, Set versus East can blow out to 50 cents, right? $2,500. Meanwhile, the exchange will have nowhere near the close to that for the margin requirement. But, and we're at 25 now, but the thing is, when you get into first notice day for the September contract and the crop is made, and we don't have a huge shortage, we might be typing out a huge shortage, that spread will go into an inverse. I mean, go into a carry. So instead of being 25 over, and who knows, maybe in the summer rallies this year, if things go well for the bulls and corn, maybe eventually gets to 30, 35, 40, who knows? Maybe 25 is the top, but eventually that spread goes into a carry as we head into delivery. So that's an interesting trade. I bring it up because I've been a lot of questions about it. So if you are a seasonal spread trader, or you do trade the basis, a lot of farmers do, so do elevators, so do commercials. I prefer Sep-Dece over July Dece. Think it's a little bit easier to trade, just in terms of the volatility. And it's one of those things where you don't go all in all at once. You put some on, and then you've got to expect, you've got to expect some turbulence here, and be prepared for that, and have the money aside to do that, and not use margin as a recommended value for that, to hold that spread for the life of the trade. If that is, you might as well not do it, because unless you're 100% right, you're gonna blow out. So, anyways, you want to talk about Set First East corn? Used to be a huge favorite of the Daniels Ag Advisory. I still like it a lot, but you do have to. There is a little bit of art and science involved in that spread. So, finally, I just want to touch base on Kansas City and Chicago again. It is my favorite wheat spread. Yeah, every time I look at the balance sheet and what's going on with the wheat market, to me, your Chicago acres are expanding at a faster rate than Kansas City. Demand for Kansas City is stronger than Chicago. What you're going to see is Chicago, for years, had a smaller stock to use, a tighter stock to usage ratio than hard red winter wheat, which is what allowed Chicago to trade over Kansas City for years, right? Where in a normal year, just based on a normal market, they have normal stock to use ratios, one's just as adequate as the other. Hard red winter wheat trades 20, 30, maybe even 50 or 60 cents higher over Chicago, just based on the wheat, the protein level. Has not been the case because of the way because Chicago had tight stocks and hard red wheat did not. Now, based on the acres that are planted, where demand looks like it's going, and where we think the yields are going to be for new crops starting July, it really likes we'll see that flip. So I still like Kansas City over Chicago. It's at about negative 10 cents, meaning Kansas City's under 10 cents. And just based on where we think the new crop stock to usage ratios are for Kansas City and Chicago, it really should flip. Will it? Nothing's certain in this life, right? There's no crystal ball. But if the ending stocks for Kansas City are going to be tighter than Chicago, not for the old crop, but for the new crop Kansas City really should go, I'm thinking, at least 20 over on Chicago for the next marketing year. So if you're interested in something like that, please let me know. Obviously, we can't give trade recs in social media, so this is not a trade rec, but there are some ideas, and if you want to go over the specifics of those ideas, I'd be happy to talk to you, or you can go look at past Turner's Takes where I have written about them. So that is going to do it for this week. Hope everyone's doing well, whether it comes to soybean oil, meal, corn, the wheat markets. Everything still looks very, very bullish. It is going to get wider ranging. There is still a lot of opportunity out there. You got to be smart about it. If you are a farmer or an end user, This is the time to really be using these types of risk management tools. If you're a spec trader, there's a lot of opportunity out there. So hope to hear from everyone. Everyone have a great rest of your week, and I'll talk to you later.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.